Well, this week on the Writing Fiction podcast, we're going to talk about art versus commerce.
Spoken of many times before, but it's always a good discussion.
It is a good discussion. And I watched the video you sent me by Derek Murphy, and we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. Before that, you can pick up Bookworms. The link is in the show notes. And if you want to write for Bookworms, that information is also in the show notes. The next Bookworms issue is Rock and Roll Horror.
Right.
Have you gotten anything yet?
I have. I've gotten a few. I haven't gotten that many. Maybe people are waiting to the last minute, which is fine, as long as it's postmarked by the deadline. But sometimes my office delivers the mail like late. Things get lost. So I have been letting people know when I receive it.
All right. Yeah. So send those in. We want them.
Send those in. Yep.
The newsletter, I will probably be writing a newsletter this, probably today, I guess. I've written one, but I guess I feel like I'm a little behind on it, but maybe just a day or two. Have you written anything in general?
I've been working a little bit on my Wattpad stories.
Yeah.
But this is just I'm working a lot at my, I have a part-time job, and I work at a theater. And we're doing a show right now, so I've been on like a tight schedule. I haven't had time to write that much, but I've been thinking about it, and that's good.
What
making
is that?
Some mental notes.
It's the thought that matters.
It's the thought that counts.
Yeah. What about YouTube?
I have a new video that's going out today with Matilda's Horoscopes.
Oh, cool.
So, day late on that. And then I have another video that I recorded that I will, with my Gothic Hearts reading challenge.
Yeah, what are you reading now?
Well, I'm finishing up the Gothic stories. So I did actually read a lot in February. And my next reading, I'm really excited about, because what I did was I bought all of the, we were talking about this, I bought all of the old Omen.
Yes.
Book, so I have all three. I had one, so I bought the other two on eBay. So I'm going to be reading all the books and watching all the Omen movies and doing like a deep dive into the Omen.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited to kind of cleanse the palate and do something horror. Actually, we watched the first Omen last week. And I just forgotten what a great movie that is. It's so good.
Let me ask you this. Do you think you could own a Doberman Pinscher after watching The Omen?
Is it a Doberman or a Rottweiler?
I thought they were Dobermans in that movie.
Or maybe they are.
I don't know.
I'm not a real big dog person.
I like medium and big dogs, but I think that movie scarred me to ever want it. Because I just see them as devil dogs.
They are devil dogs. I know. The dogs, and that's something I'll discuss on my video, are such an important part of that atmosphere. It's really a perfect horror film in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So good. And what else? I guess that's about it.
Yeah, for my YouTube channel, I just released the books I read in February.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just put up a video last night. It's just like a 2-minute video, but it's The Catcher in the Rye and just talking about the curse and how the connections between like Mark David Chapman, John Lennon's murderer, and then John Hinckley and some others. So that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting topic with the Dakota building and everything.
Yeah. And it's just fascinating to me. Mark David Chapman literally. There's that picture of Lennon signing his album, and it's the creepiest thing because you know,
that
like
2 hours creepy.
Later, he kills him.
I know, and that was such a shock. I remember exactly where I was when I heard that news, and I think a lot of people do. It was really, really awful.
Yeah,
a big John Lennon fan, still am.
If you want to follow us on Instagram, it's at Bookworms Horror Zine. If you want to leave a review, you can do that also. On your favorite podcast platform. All right, the topic is art versus commerce. Should you write for art or should you write for the market and money? Regina, what are your thoughts?
Well, I probably saw that Derek Murphy video. I think it was 7 years old. So it's it's probably when I first started writing, around the time when I first started writing, when I saw that video. And there's several other videos. There's a guy who wrote a book, his name's Chris Fox, I think, who wrote a book called Right to Market, which I bought. I think it was like a 99-cent Kindle book, and I did read it. I was a little annoyed at that book, frankly, because he spent most of it marketing his own book, like talking about mm-hmm. his book. And that's like, I'm like, oh, this guy's kind of a marketing genius, because it's kind of like that, if you pay me $1, I'll send you a pamphlet, tell you how to make $1 million, get a million people to send you $1. You know, it's like one of those. It feels a little sideshow carny.
Yeah.
Just saying. And that to me is always a turnoff. I mean, nothing against Chris Fox as a person. I don't know him. But I just felt a little bit like there is that element when you go into this topic.
Here's my thing. After watching Derek Murphy, I did some research. So I go to Amazon. And I could not find a fiction book by him on Amazon. He's got like 20 books on how to write books, how to market books, grow a marketing. And so I had to dig deeper to find his books he's talking about in that 7-year-old video, which is like angels and maybe like a mermaid. But
yes, he writes like YA fiction.
But I don't think he does anymore. What I'm gathering is he did probably write those fiction books and was probably somewhat successful. And when he started talking about it and writing books about how to be successful, he was making more money, probably making more money doing that. And maybe he is writing fiction, but I cannot find a new book by him.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And to me, it's like, if you were writing fiction and making so much money, why did you switch to writing nonfiction about mm-hmm. writing fiction and making money?
Yes, I got that feeling too. And I think I actually did read one of Derek's books because I got into watching his videos. And his videos are actually really good. But yeah, he probably makes more money giving writing advice about how to make money writing fiction than writing the actual fiction. I'm not sure, but that's an interesting.
Yeah. I just think if you were a fiction writer, it would have been much easier for me to find your fiction. And I had to I Googled Derek Murphy and nothing came up where it related to fiction. So I had to put in Derek Murphy fiction. And then from there I got to some site, but his stuff that was fiction was like 2019.
Okay.
I didn't find anything recent.
And if you think if he's trying to promote his books through his videos talking about marketing and how to make money, you think that he, because he seems very savvy about these algorithms and search engines and stuff like that, that he would have made it easier to access his fiction. Because a lot of people, I think, would watch his video and say, oh, well, I'd like to check out what he's talking about.
Right. I personally think that his YouTube video skyrocketed when he got in, realized that the niche that he can make the money from is talking about this. I mean, his videos are all about that. And so I think, and I'm not saying he doesn't know what he's talking about.
No.
I'm saying that he pivoted to something else and, you know, not so much into the fiction. I could be way off. So if you're listening and you know that he's got new books out and things like that, absolutely, like, put it in the comments.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Well, no, he was saying that people call him a hack and refer to him as a hack. And I think, which is not a nice thing to hear about your work, but this gets into the crux of that art versus commerce debate. Because most fiction writers are creative people. They were creative writers. And that the instinct is to be creative and not to make money off the bat. You know, like, that's where that conflict gets involved. So I think it's easy to be like, oh, he's a hack. He just does some stuff for money. Well, we all want to make money at doing this. So I think there is a point where we have to discuss or decide for ourselves, like, how are we going to approach this? I don't particularly think that chasing a popular genre is a good idea, mostly because by the time your book gets published, that might not be a popular genre anymore. I don't think it's a good idea to chase trends, is what I'm saying. But you can still find that sweet spot where there's like overlap. Some things will always be popular, like, I don't know, vampire romances or something. You have to find what's right for you. I mean, it depends on the writer. So I think that, you know, it's a bit of a compromise.
So what he's saying is he has a PhD in literature. He's studied literature. So he's got the chops to write whatever he wants to write. And it's almost like if you got a carpenter who has mm-hmm. the skills to build whatever he wants to build. And so, like, if people start wanting fancy mailboxes, maybe he'll start building that to make his money. Or then all of a sudden now they're like, well, I don't want a fancy mailbox. I want a shed. So he'll start building sheds because that's what everybody wants. Right. That's kind of what he's saying he is doing, is that he's not writing crap. He's writing for the market, but he knows how to write.
Well, if you can do that and fulfill yourself creatively, right. more power to you. I mean, exactly. I think Dean Koontz is a great example of that. When gothic romance was a popular genre, he wrote under a female pen name and did gothic romance. When horror was big, he did horror. Then he kind of transitioned into mostly thrillers and mysteries. And he's one of the most popular, most probably richest fiction writer out there, you know? So if you can do it, you can do it, but not everyone is going to do that.
And I think we need to look at the reality. I think there are the outliers, like J.K. Rowling, right? Or mm-hmm. 50 Shades of Grey, and those type of books that just hit it. And those people are now set. They've hit it, that now they have a following. And with the exception of J.K. Rowling, I think her fans kind of abandoned her. But I think she still makes tons of money for Harry Potter, so it doesn't matter if she writes.
She doesn't care.
And then there's people who don't make any money. They just write and they're not making any money. And then there's I think, a middle ground where you're writing for market. Like, you know, you're probably not going to hit it big. Maybe you will, but you're okay with just like putting out vampire romance novels, maybe self-publishing, and you're making an okay living, or you're doing okay, right? I mean, people, if you go out and try to get a job today, I mean, you're not getting paid that much. So, like, if you work as hard on your stories, you might end up making enough money for a small part-time job, you know?
Yeah.
You might be working a lot more than part-time, but it's something you like doing. So I think you can't say, I'm going to write for market and because I think I'm going to be rich, because that's a shot in the dark that you're going to become J.K. Rowling.
Right. And I think, if are you familiar with the website, or it's a Facebook group? I'm part of it. And I, you know, I go and lurk sometimes. I don't participate too much. 20 books to 50K.
No, I don't know what that is.
It's another guy. There are two men who started, and they're marketers. And they're both fiction writers, but they really, I'm sure, made the bulk of their money doing this. They have conventions in Vegas every year. And I think Derek Murphy may have spoken at one of the conventions. But it's all about how to write to market, how to write tons of books. The idea was, if you write 20 books, you can make 50 grand. Well, I've written over 20 books and I have not made 50 grand yet. But I'm, you know, I've made over $10,000 so far, if I really add it up, which is pretty good.
It is great. That's amazing.
To put back into my coffers, it's to me, the money that I've made just goes back into my writing.
Yeah, you're like a nonprofit organization.
I know.
All your money goes back into the industry.
But I would love to make money doing this. And, you know, when I listen to videos like that, I think, oh, gee, you know, maybe I need to write more like romance. But that's not really a a genre that I enjoy. I don't like happy endings. I like horror. And so even the romance that I have written, like the young adult romance, they're always dark. So that's like where if I'm writing to market, it's always going to be, that's my sweet spot. Does that make sense? I'm still writing in a popular genre.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I'm not going to write Harlequin romances because my heart is not in that stuff. And I would never pull it off convincingly.
Yes, and I think that's where the art part comes in, is like, the question is, can you write a good novel in a genre that you're not passionate about? And I think the answer is yes and no. It depends on the person.
Well, like maybe with someone like a Robert Heinlein and those old time, they call them hack writers. They might be like, what's popular this week? You know, they got the cigar. What is it? alien vampire romance. Yeah, let's go. And they'll knock it out.
Right.
I made my rent for the week or whatever. You know, that is one way to approach it. And you can't really say that person is less of an artist than someone who toils away at some great masterpiece that no one will ever read.
Right. It's okay if you want to be the artist and write literary fiction, but don't go into it expecting some sort of outcome where you're Stephen King. I mean, I think this is something I remember in music, where I had friends who wrote music for a very limited amount of listeners, right? There's not that many people maybe listening to Americana type music. So you got to know that's your audience. So don't expect Bon Jovi numbers. I'm dating myself. Don't expect Taylor Swift numbers. If you're writing, I would say Tom Waits, but I know he's big, but he's smaller though. You know what I mean? Like if I walked up to the average person and said, you know who Taylor Swift is, they would know. But Tom Waits, they probably won't. So I'm saying like you can be Tom Waits, but don't expect Taylor Swift money.
It's like the old record stores. Remember when you go to the record store and they would have like the world music section?
Yes.
And they would have like really kind of, I'm sure there were interesting records, but they got less attention than Bon Jovi.
Yeah. And if you're angry about that, then you don't know what you're doing. You don't understand the world. Fun. You know,
it's like, you don't know what you're doing.
You don't.
Yeah. Well, you don't, because you don't have a realistic expectation.
Yeah.
And speaking of expectations, and this is something where Derek Murphy talks about in his videos, and I agree with him, is that you have to meet readers' expectation on at least some level.
Yeah, when it comes to the genre.
For the genre. So if you're writing a romance, you've got to give the happy ending, like a traditional romance that ends in either a proposal or a marriage or something. That is the tradition of romance. That's how it's set up. And if you don't deliver that, you're going to get horrible reviews and people will be throwing your book across the room and screaming. And same with the horror genre. You have to deliver some kind of gruesomeness somewhere, or it's not horror.
So what do you say to the author who's like, well, I want to be the person that says that the people who review it are like, this person did something we didn't expect and we love them for it.
Well, that's always something that could happen. And then when it does, I mean, that's when people break new ground.
Right.
In any art. And that's taking it to a whole different level. So if you want to be that writer, more power to you. Try. But I think it's when you're wishy-washy about it, that's the problem.
Yeah.
For example, if I'm like, well, I don't know what I'm writing. And I've heard this from writers before. I can't decide if it's a romance. I really don't know what this is.
Oh, I know. If you don't know what it is, no one else is going to know what it is. You better find out what it is if you're writing something. Because if you don't know, no one's going to know. It's going to be a big mess.
Or not. It could be genius. I don't.
But I think if something, when we're talking about that breaking new ground, it has to come from an honest, true place within yourself. You can't just be like, I don't think you can like construct this thing I think that when artists break new ground, it's because it's coming from somewhere inside of them. And that truth comes out in the art, and people can see that. They can see if you're trying to do something that is pretending to break new ground. And then it just looks silly.
Yeah, like you're, I mean, you probably read more Stephen King than I have. He's done that where he's tried to do something different a few times, right?
Yeah, but
but he's still Stephen King, so he still has that built-in audience.
He has an audience that they know. This is the same with film. Mm-hmm. The people who pay or the people who are behind it know there's an audience built into. That's why we don't get any new great movies, is because we have to have something that already has an established audience, something that's intellectual property that exists, that we know if we make this movie, we know X amount of people are going to go, and maybe some more. And so they don't take chances.
Right. Have you seen this? This is an excellent little clip on YouTube with Frank Zappa talking about this.
Oh, no, but tell me. And I probably heard it.
Yeah, but why this? There was great music in like the 70s, and you could apply that to great film too. As he said, because the guys who owned these companies with these cigar smoking guys, he does like an imitation, kind of like Bernie Beck and Bernie Breck in Gemini Rising.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know. What do you got? I don't know. Do something different. I don't know. Show me something. All right. Let's see if the kids will like it. Like there was an open mind about letting new ideas in because it was kind of at a place where.
Yeah, people
the
wanted that.
It was changing. So people wanted were willing to take a chance and a risk. And he was saying now, when he was speaking of, I don't know, it was probably recorded in the 90s, that the younger generation coming in are more restricted and more uptight and more closed-minded than the cigar-smoking guy.
Yeah, because they're looking at this.
Everyone thinks they know what the thing is going to sell. But you really don't know.
You don't. And that's where, at this time, I think when it comes to art, this is for writing, for film, for music, you gotta dig. I don't think you're going to find great movements or breakthrough things in the mainstream. And it's even harder today to find that stuff.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's why there's probably more groundbreaking stuff happening on television and like cable television than in traditional films.
Yeah, I wouldn't even, I would say streaming. Cable television's like streaming dating yourself.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, streaming services. And there's a whole genre of new genre of like, I mean, one of the biggest genres, and I think also it would be a very lucrative nonfiction genre is true crime. Like I watch a true crime probably before I go to sleep every night on Netflix or something. It calms me to read, to hear about murder and stuff.
Yeah, I love true
crime. But I do too. But like something like that, I think there's room to grow in some of these genres, but certain ones, you have to have that expectation. You have to meet that. I mean, but you also have to know that genre. Like, if I were to try to write science fiction, which I love, I would have to do a lot of research because I'm not very scientific, you know, like hard science fiction. I would love to challenge myself. I've done like more psychological science fiction stuff, like time travel story, this kind of thing. But to do a real science fiction story, like a 2001 or something, I would have to do a lot of research, but I could try doing that. But there would be expectations, and if I had shoddy science, like I got a critical review on my book Code Red because my blood science was kind of shoddy. And you know what? The reviewer was right. I did do some research on it, but I am no scientist, and I'm sure I got a lot of things wrong.
You know what's funny? Like I read Code Red and I didn't notice that. So.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not, that's the thing. I don't think you, like, honestly, in horror, that's not as important. If you were doing like medical thriller, I think it matters. But in horror, I mean, we got vampires. So, like, at this point, why are you worried about whether the blood is right? Because, you know what I mean? Like,
well, this one reviewer was very, you know, annoyed by it.
Yeah, I did not. Yeah, you had some kind of, what is that, blood doctor reading your book? The one guy who was upset.
The hematologist.
Yes, that's it. How dare she? But
I know.
But I don't think it matters when you're in supernatural or paranormal, because you can't prove that stuff anyway. So why are you going after that? I mean, it's something, but it's not. Like I said, I didn't notice it, and it did not affect my level of enjoyment.
Well, that's good.
It didn't stop me in my tracks. Now, there are some things that do, but you're right. If you don't know the genre you're writing in, you run the risk of doing something either wrong or cliche, or mm-hmm. something that's recently or has been done to death.
Yeah, and there are so many readers, especially in the romance genre. Then there's a lot of these different subgenres to romance. They know all the tropes. I mean, these people read a lot, and they will nail you on, if you get something wrong, or I don't know, do something that's been done maybe too many times.
Romance is huge, so. If I wanted to write for market because I think money is in a certain spot, that would be where I would go. But I, like you said, I never read a romance book. Maybe the closest thing would have been like Romeo and Juliet, which I don't think that's a happy ending.
No.
It would be silly for me to chase the money when it comes to that genre. And I have no interest in it.
There is, I'm trying to find it on my computer. What is it called? Kaylytics is actually a brilliant idea. And I've actually bought some of their reports when I was doing, like, I bought the horror one. And what it is, it is an examination of the Amazon market, and it's all data. So it gives you like, what are the popular keywords and all this kind of stuff. It's all the analytics on these markets, and what it allows you to do is find, like, the niche within the niche. For example, if you want your book to be number one on Amazon, this analytics can help, and I think Derek Murphy does something about this too, well, can help you get there. Like choosing, you know, there are different subcategories, like choosing the one that is not the most popular because there's too much competition, but this one is not so popular. You will be up in the ranks. It's all this kind of stuff.
That's the same science behind hashtags. Like they have things out there that'll tell you, here's a very popular hashtag, but it's overused. And so maybe you want to use this one because you'll get more hits with it.
Mm-hmm.
But how can you write like that?
I know.
And this is the art part we're talking about. Like, to me, I have some idea that's eating away and I want to tell that story. If I go and do this research first and it says that, like, you know, gay mimes killing cats is the new thing, I'll be like, okay, maybe I can find a story about that. But it's like, it's not coming from a true place, and I find it would be hard. How long could I go on writing that and be happy?
Well, that is a really good point, because at the end of the day, the writer has to sit down in the seat and write it. And if you're writing just to market, how inspired are you going to be? Are you going to have the creative energy to push through with this project? That's something to really consider.
Yeah, in that case, why not just get a job where you write for somebody else or do something?
Exactly,
you know?
Be a ghostwriter.
Yeah, somebody says, I want you to write this. All right, pay me this and I'll do it, you know?
Yeah, well, there are people who do that. And I think the market in a lot of ways on Amazon has been flooded with AI stories. And now I don't know what they've done to kind of counteract that. I know when you publish, you have to hit this little button that says, I declare that this wasn't written by a robot. But is anyone really checking? Because what you could do is say, okay, I could go on my Kaylytics and see what is the hottest, most best-selling romance book out there right now. And I could program a story and get it out in a couple days and publish it and make some money. I mean, I'm sure there are people doing that, and I'm not saying that's wrong. It's just that it's part of the world now.
Yeah. Speaking of AI, I started a paid subscription on my newsletter, and I set you up, Regina, so you don't have to pay. You can actually go in and read these.
Oh, okay.
I did okay. I'm doing AI critiques. So the idea is I put a prompt in and create a little short story that I didn't do. AI wrote it. And then I go and I critique it. And then you can, too, read the story, Regina, and say what you think about it. And if you want to subscribe, it's $5 a month. I tried to get as low as I can, but Substack doesn't let you go lower than five.
Okay.
And the idea is to get people to basically learn by critiquing and sharing their thoughts with each other. And it's like a little classroom. But the idea behind the AI part is AI doesn't have any feelings. So we can be as cruel as we want. Like,
that's good.
Right? And be like,
I love that.
That is the worst sentence I've ever heard, or that's laughable. You know, you can say these things and no one's going to have their feelings hurt. Also, I can't just take somebody's art and put it up on a newsletter and critique it, you know? So this is also not dealing with any rights issues.
Definitely. You've got me really intrigued.
I'll send you the link. But if you're interested, you can go to the newsletter. And actually, I'll say it. Let me go now to tell the actual story title, because you'll see it when you go.
Okay.
It is.
So is this your, this is on Substack?
Yes. And so it's the, all I did was tell AI to write a haunted house story. And they come up with the title. It's The Haunting of Willow Lake Manor.
Oh, wow. What AI program are you using?
I'm using ChatGTP.
Oh, okay.
And so...
Is that costs money to... I've never used it.
No, it's free.
Oh, okay. So, and how many words will they give you?
I tell it how many. I said 1,500 words.
And so, really, they write a 1,500 word story?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I touched nothing. I give you... Like, if you go into it... I explained, and I said, here's the prompt. This is all I said. Actually, I didn't even say haunt it. I said, write a 1,500 word horror story. And I didn't edit or anything. And then I just put it in there. You can read the story. And then at the end, I have leave a comment. I have put my critique. And then if you want, Regina, you can put your critique in. But I want people to join this so we can have a classroom to discuss writing, and I'm going to be doing a new prompt every week with a new story. And if anybody wants to,
that's a great idea.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to suggest a prompt, they can let us know and I can put that in and put the story in anyway.
And you know, because I write horror stories, I'm already thinking this AI is going to take their revenge. On all of us critiquing their story.
But it's
I have to think about how that would go up, play out.
But what's also cool is we'll be able to see as this goes on, is AI improving or is it staying pretty much the same? That's another interesting thing to say, because I mean, literally every person who uses AI is teaching AI how to be better.
Oh,
right.
It's kind of scary.
Well, we're in the horror.
Will a writer be obsolete?
No, I don't think so. I think if I go to a bookstore and I have a choice between an AI-generated story or a human-generated story, I'm going to buy the human story. Doesn't mean I'm going to buy it because I think it's better, but this goes on to the eventually, what if AI becomes sentient, right? At what point does AI have rights as a sentient being? So, I mean, that's way down, maybe not even way down the line. Let's say 10 years. If this thing has rights and is indistinguishable to a human brain, I don't know what the answer will be then. But I don't think that humans will reject other human art. I think it will always have a higher value.
I would hope so. You know, I had this nightmare just reminding me about a future. And I just had these visions of, you know, a lot of times we think of robots, we think of that they're taking, they become human looking, right? Mm-hmm. But in my nightmare, it was almost like like the machine had completely taken over, and there was like human parts kind of attached to the machine, but like in a horrible way, like just half a face kind of like screaming in pain is attached to this metallic object. Like the machine was kind of eating the humans. So maybe I'll write a horror story about that, because it was a really horrible, fascinating nightmare. And
it feels very Clive Barker.
Yes, it felt very Clive Barker when I woke up. And speaking of Clive Barker, I've been wanting to do like a Clive Barker readathon. Maybe I'll do that coming up soon. I have so many ideas about things I want to read and write, and it's fun. But this AI thing is fascinating, and I'm just wondering, are they publishing, like if you were able to get that story, and how long did it take AI to construct that? A couple of minutes?
No, like less than 10 seconds probably.
Oh, wow. So if you slap a cover on that and publish it on Amazon, and you did that, I don't know, several times a day.
Right, so...
maybe you can make some money that way, but I'm sure Amazon must have some way of detecting AI.
One thing I think should be allowed, if the story was AI created and you're honest and upfront, why not be able to sell that? I don't see why that wouldn't be allowed. However, it's not, I think people think, yes, I'm doing it in the simplest way. I would, if I wanted to use AI as a tool for writing stories, it would be a lot of work. Because, one, if I told it to write a novel, I have to then read that novel, edit that novel, go back. AI just does this one thing, and you're not going to trust that it's going to do it well, right? If you're really a sleazy person and you really just want to make money and not care about what you're producing as a product, then yes, you could do one prompt, put it out there, and then do all the work that it takes to actually publish it and then put it on the market and not care if it's good or not and hope people start buying it. I don't know if it would work. Yeah. I don't think it would work, because somebody is not, one, even if I wrote it not using AI, still no guarantee somebody's going to find that story on Amazon and I'm going to be rich. So it's not about just putting something out there.
Right.
That doesn't guarantee you anything. And
an AI is useful. Like, I have Grammarly. I don't use it for everything, but if I'm feeling that a paragraph feels awkward or whatever, not working, I'll put it in Grammarly and I'll find some mistakes. And I think that's a really useful tool.
It is. You know, it's funny. People like are talking about AI now, but it's been around a long time. And Apple doesn't call it AI. They call it machine learning. And so...
okay.
Grammarly, any kind of grammar tool is AI. Siri and Alexa and all these things that have been around are AI, and they're machine learning. They're getting better at what they do. But if we're talking, first of all, I don't think you're an artist if you're honestly just creating widgets
right.
to sell. And
also those widgets are shaping the art. Like even the programs we all use, like Photoshop and all these things and the platforms like Instagram, that is shaping the art. It's giving it a dimension. Art is always supposed to be seeking out the new, and that, and I think you always have to keep that in mind, no matter what level of artist you are, like be open to that. Because you may create a new monster. You know, like in horror, we have different types of monsters. When has been the last great new monster? There's always the potential for making that great new monster.
Yeah, I know. If you mean like Freddy and Jason and all that. But you know what's interesting? I think Grady Hendrix did a short story in, I think it's, I can't remember the name of it. It's a very recent short story collection, and it was basically a traditional monster, the monster under your bed, right? But the story took that idea and just made it just a great short story. I don't want to spoil it. Let me look this up. And I was just like so impressed that we took something that, like you're saying, creating the next great monster. But what about reinventing the monster we've known all our lives? And I think he did a great job at that. I have it on my Audible, so let me jump into that.
Okay.
And tell you.
Well, it's like a ghost, the ghost story, like a ghost is probably one of the oldest horror stories, but you can always be reinventing the ghost or the vampire.
Yeah.
But I think having a new monster would be kind of fun. I'll work on my machine idea.
Yeah.
The machine monster that eats your flesh.
Flesh-eating robots.
I still have to write my unnatural porn killer robot story.
So the book is called Creature. It's called Creature Feature. I think, an Amazon only Audible thing. I don't remember what the name of the story was, but it's Grady Hendrix. Joe Hill's in there too, and his is great as well. Just throwing things against the wall without any, I mean, that's it. I mean, it's not art. But I like what you brought up. You brought up Photoshop. Now, when the camera came out, people were like, that's cheating, you know? When all these artists who drew and were recreating the building, now we could just take a picture of the building and people are like, well, how's that art, right? But now nobody questions whether photography is art. And then when Photoshop came out, that was a huge thing where people are like, well, that's not art. You're actually going in and manipulating it. But if you don't know anything about photos, the darkroom was a big manipulator. So you were able to dodge and burn in the darkroom before Photoshop. So people were able to change the original negative to be whatever they want it to you. That's part of the art.
Well, it is. Just all the technology shapes the art. I watched a documentary on Netflix called Circling the Circle in the Square. It's about the guys who created all those iconic album covers in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
60s and 70s, like Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd. And when you see that they actually had, what is the Zeppelin album cover with the naked kids on the rock?
Houses of the Holy.
Okay. They did a whole segment of how they created that image, and they actually had to drive out to where those rocks are. I think it was in Ireland or something, or Scotland, and get the kids to crawl. And they were only two kids, so they, you know, through manipulation in the darkroom, they were able to cut and paste more kids on there. And then they had to get some guy to do the color. But the point was, it's like, wow, there's so much work involved in creating this image that could be created in Photoshop in a few minutes.
Yes.
So, but have we lost what's special about... I think it was David Gilmour was talking about in the documentary about how great album art. And I know in Gemini Rising, I did a whole segment about about this with the Genesis album, what that was like. And now he was trying to talk to some younger kid about album art, and they're like, "What does that mean?" He's like, "Well, you know, the little square that comes up on your phone." That's what we're talking about. But it used to be something different. Now, things change and things progress and things are lost. But I think that there is, I guess, an appreciation now for going back and looking at that stuff. But I mean, I know you collect vinyl too. There's something really special about it. And the time that took people to create that work shows in the art in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And just because you could do it faster in Photoshop doesn't necessarily mean that you're creating art, right? Like, you could recreate that, but it's not that. It's not how it's created. It's the soul that created it. Like, that person who took this idea and then however they put it together, from a real true place. Not just like, all right, I can do this in Photoshop, but if there's no soul in that art, you know, somebody might like it, but majority of people might be like, it feels flat. There's something missing.
There is a flatness, I think, about the images now.
Oh, well, you know, we could argue that with movie posters, too. The movie posters are just really crap now. They're just Photoshop crap.
I know.
Compared to them finding an artist who would paint. Like, if you look at the original Raiders of the Lost Ark posters, that was a painting. compared to go look at Dial Destiny, which is just a whole bunch of people photoshopped to one thing. It's just garbage now. And you know what's funny about that, bringing up the album? I think it was Mercer Museum had a showing of original album art. And almost every one of them, it says artist unknown, because these people were brought on as just freelancers and they didn't have any right to the art. It was, they were hired and the art is owned by the record company. So some of the most iconic album covers, we don't even know who did it.
Well, even like I remember with the R. Crumb documentary, he did that incredible record album for Janis Joplin's band.
I have it. I'm literally staring at it on my wall.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's called Cheap Thrills, Big Brother.
Cheap Thrills, Big Brother and the Holding Company.
Yeah, I found that album at a thrift store. And the album's great, too. But the artwork is so amazing. So you may continue. I just need to say I have it on my wall.
I have that record, too. I think it's Joe's beautiful. Old record. It's beautiful, but I think he only got paid, you know, maybe $100.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Do that image.
Yeah, it's so good.
And speaking of R. Crumb, like the old comic art is something that I just love.
But what we're talking about is that it's not really the tools, right?
Right.
And so if you're creating because you love to write, you love to tell your stories, you know, you will, there's no guarantee with money. There's no guarantee. So if there's no guarantee, shouldn't you at least do something that is true and coming from your heart?
Yes. You know? It doesn't mean it's going to be good or that people are going to want to consume it, but sometimes you just have to get that story out. And I don't think there's anything wrong, and I might have implied earlier that I did with that. I don't know what this is, because I do think that is an approach, especially in the early stages of writing. Like, I'm not sure what I want to say. Like, a lot of times people just start out with like a personal narrative.
Yeah.
And then that can develop into something else. I think the important thing is writing, but writing what you really want to write, whatever that is. If you love romance and you happen to write in a really popular genre and you make money from it, great. But if you write something that's less popular, it's not that's any less valid, but you do have to be realistic about it.
And you can research this stuff. So if you want to write romance and you don't know anything about it, maybe you think you will love it, then there are plenty of people out there telling you what you need to put in your romance.
Yeah, like you can go on Harlequin website and they're always looking for writers and they give you a breakdown sheet of exactly what they want. And that's writing to market. And maybe you'll sell a book to Harlequin.
Right.
That would be cool.
And it might be that it's not so much the genre that gets you, but finding the right words to tell that story in that genre. Yes. But again, you need to know what you're getting into. Like if you go in, like you said, and did a romance and then they shoot each other at the end or they get in a big fight and now they're separate, you know, like you might not get that person to buy your second book.
Right. There are expectations and just like in some of like my reviews I've gotten, people do at times get angry if you don't meet the expectation.
And I'm sure like
whatever their expectations are.
Like we were talking recently about, you know, reading James Patterson, and I guarantee you that James Patterson readers have expectations of what he should be putting out. And if he strays, they might probably still buy it if they're hardcore, but they'll probably have very strong opinions about what he did differently.
And they'll show up at his house with pitchfork and torches. Remember in Misery?
Oh, yes. That's a great example.
It's a great example. It's such a good book and movie, of course.
Yes.
Because Stephen King, I'm sure, put his own... He probably had met a couple of... What's her name?
Kathy Bates.
But what's the character's name? I forget. It's right on the tip of my tongue.
I know.
But like, he's probably met some of those fans in his time. And when he killed Misery, she went crazy.
It's interesting because I met two sons of famous people. One was Joe Hill, and I was at the thing in Brooklyn. And there are some hardcore Stephen King fans that just wanted to ask him questions about his dad.
He's probably tired of
it. I know. And then the other one was Dweezil Zappa. And I was in I was in a class with him and some people. And there were people there who all they wanted to do was ask questions about Frank Zappa, you know? And so
that's
those,
the curse of being the son or daughter of a famous person.
And that's what I mean. It's like these people get so obsessed that they're going to try to get as close as possible to that person, even through their family, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird because it felt awkward when, like, it's one thing to say, you know, how did your father influence you versus like just trying to get weird questions answered. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm sure that that gets tiring.
So if you're...
Especially when your parent is someone on the level of a Stephen King.
Yeah, or Frank Zappa,
Or Frank Zappa. You're always going to be in his shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you change your name and, you know, to Joe Hill. Well, his name was... Was it Joe Hill?
No, his name, his real name is Joe Hillstrom King.
Okay.
And he switched it to Joe Hill. Yeah. The point here is, if you want to make money as a writer, and let's just say as a really bad part-time job money, you still will have to work very, very, very hard at the craft.
Yes.
And if, and that means like thinking of it as a job. You get up in the morning, you have a schedule, you write, you then edit, you have to market yourself, you have to do all this stuff. And if you're going to put that many hours in, then you should be writing what you love, not writing what you think is going to work. Because
I agree.
There's no reason to do that. You're not going to, if you're like, I'm going to get up and I'm going to write vampire romance novels because they're going to sell. And you work very, very hard. Because let's say at least a year on putting together that vampire romance. Right? Now, how many hours did you put into this? And now you put it out there and it's crickets.
Right. You're going to feel...
You hear that?
Like you could have spent time writing something you love. And it might still be crickets, but at least you enjoyed the process.
Yeah. And that's right. You enjoyed the process. Now, I think that if you want to make this really bad part-time job money, as soon as that book is out there, you got to start your next book. I think if you're going, especially with self-publishing, Regina St. Clair has built herself a brand that people are looking for her next book. And
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah, and they will be like, okay, And the great thing is, if Regina finds a new reader with Carney, they will now be able to say, holy crap, she's got more stuff.
Yeah.
And then go back, and then that stuff gets purchased, right? So that's the thing. Regina keeps working, keeps putting stuff out there, and each time that readership is building, and it goes backwards too. So it's not just like I'm waiting for the next book, but I just discovered this book and now I know she has other ones. So I'm going to go buy Code Red, you know?
Yeah. And what's interesting is, you know, I write horror, but I also write YA paranormal, more romance, but it's dark. And it used to be that the YA books far outsold my horror books because it was a more popular genre. But now when I look at my analytics, and that's also really important information that Amazon provides, my horror books, and the two top selling ones are Code Red and Carney, are outselling my YA books, which is great because I enjoy writing adult horror a lot more than the YA books. So So I'm still writing my YA stories and just putting it on Wattpad. That's kind of more of an experiment. And on that site, those are the ones that are most popular because it's mostly younger people, female audience. But it's great that my horror books are doing well because that's giving me energy then to start the next horror book, which I already have started. And I just haven't sat down and written the whole thing yet, but I've made some progress.
But I will say, as a reader, and you can answer for yourself, Regina, I do not read in one genre. I do have a genre I enjoy. Like, I do like horror, but I also like science fiction. I love literary fiction. You know, I have an eclectic taste when it comes to reading. I read a lot of nonfiction. So the idea that I'm going to read a YA novel by Regina St. Clair and then be, oh, was she doing adult? How dare she? You know, like, no, I liked what she did with young adult. I'm going to pick up her other, because there's definitely, Regina, something of you inside this that the people are leaning towards. Like, they liked what you did, and then there's that still, Regina still exists. Like, Stephen King did this. I think he did his book, but he did a young adult book. And even Baldacci has his young adult novels. And you're still getting that author, though. What about you? Do you read just horror?
No. I read widely. And we talked about this on one of our recent podcasts. I read a lot of nonfiction, too. Right now, I'm currently listening to H.B. Lovecraft, a complete works in audiobook. So that's like a project that I'm doing. I read everything. I read cheap, rock and roll biographies.
Right. So the idea that you
I read so much.
Yeah. And so you can expect that readers, if you're writing, think of, I believe it's, especially with self-publishing, Regina St. Clair is a brand.
Right.
And that brand is going, I have a good feeling the reason why the adult stuff is selling is because a lot of your YA readers are jonesing for more St. Clair.
Maybe.
And so they're like, hey, I'm going to pick this up. And I don't...
I also, being part of BookTube and HorrorTube, a lot of the readers, there's like a lot of crossover there, I think. That's been something I've slowly built my YouTube channel over. I think I've been doing it, 5 years, which is kind of a long time. But you have to see, like, are you in it for the long game, the long haul? You can develop yourself as a writer slowly, which I recommend. I think it's the best approach. But some people might put out that first book. What is it? The Martian? Wasn't that like a huge independent?
Oh, Andy Weir?
Wasn't it? Didn't he release that just on Amazon and it became...
I think you're right. Yeah, now that I think about it. I should post... I have an interview with Andy Weir that I did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So I'll put that up as a bonus episode. Yeah, that's when he did... a Project... Hold on, I have it here. Project Hail Mary was his most recent book. And I had him on. And...
I missed that.
Yeah, he did The Martian. Then he did Artemis, which I liked a lot. But a lot of people... It's interesting that we talk about this. This is a guy who put Martian out. He got a movie with Matt Damon.
Right.
I love that. It's Matt Damon's... Like, there's a series of Saving Matt Damon movies.
That's funny.
Yeah, you could... I think Saving Private Ryan, they're trying to save Matt Damon. But he did Artemis, and the main character was female, and a lot of people gave him grief about that. I thought it was great world building, and you know, it's basically like the moon has been populated, and it was just so well put together. I did not have a problem with the protagonist being female and him writing. I guess people thought it sounded like a man writing it. I didn't see that, but I don't know. But then
people get all worked up about that stuff.
Yeah, and I don't think it was worth getting worked up. But then his newest one is Project Hail Mary, and that's when I interviewed him for that. We talk about all his books, but I'll put it up. But you're right. There's a lot of artists who are now being discovered through self publishing or putting a film on YouTube or writing a song and it gets big on TikTok. And then from that point, I guess my advice, though, is if you ever get approached, get a lawyer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you see these poor kids who write a song and it becomes big on TikTok. And then all of a sudden they are like every quote unquote record producer or record company wants to sign them. And they don't know anything. They think, oh, my God, yeah. So, like, definitely if you're a writer and somebody's like, we want to do something, like, research that publisher and definitely probably get a lawyer and find out what, if you're going to sign to somebody, what they're trying to do. Because there's a lot of scummy people out there just willing to, like.
Oh, I remember there when we did Gemini Rising, there was, like, some website that wanted to feature, and I guess they were pretty popular, I forget who they were, feature the show on their website. We're like, oh, okay, what are the terms? Well, forever. You know, we just want to be able to have rights to your work forever.
Yeah.
No way. You know, like right now I still distribute all those DVDs I send them out periodically to independent record stores all over the United States. And every once in a while I'll get, hey, can I get a few more? And that's how I've been distributing it. It's just like the fact that somebody would actually think I would give away my work. It's crazy.
And that's
you really have to be careful with that.
And same with.
And in some of these deals, it's like, and anything you produce in the future, we'll own.
Right. So let's explain like Bookworms. If you write a story and you send it into Bookworms, we pay you. And what are the terms?
6 months from. Exclusive rights for us 6 months from the publication date.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you can publish your story wherever you want. The rights revert back to you, but we have the right to then keep that in publication for forever.
And that's very fair. You got to watch out for these people who are doing what Regina just said. Hey, give us your story. And by the way, we own it and you get nothing.
Right.
Yeah, be very careful.
You'll get exposure. It's like, no.
Oh, God. I hate that. There's a market for everything. What was the one you just picked up? The horror, extreme horror. That's a market.
Oh, right. Yes, that is a market.
Right? Romance is a market. Comedy is a market. Like, there is a market for everything. How many people are in that market is different. But mm-hmm. You can, like I said, you can get, if you work hard at this, work hard at like trying to be, I think you said it before, work hard at getting that first dollar, right?
Yeah. That was from Derek Murphy.
Yeah. Work hard at just making enough money that you can, it pays for it. But you're not, you know, unless it's, and that's the thing, take those outliers out of your mind. Those ones who write a book and it becomes this, you know, huge bestseller. If that happens to you, that's a stroke of luck. But that's not something I think you can plan for.
Also, some of these bestsellers, like some of the people on the 20K to 100 or 50 grand or whatever website, they will give their statistics and you're like, oh my gosh, how did they sell 100,000 books in a month? What? How can I compete with that? Well, they'll tell you some of their strategies. They spend $20,000 a month advertising.
On advertising, Facebook. Yes. Yeah, it's true. You might make $50,000, but you spend $20,000. So you kind of made $30,000, and that's worth it. You know,
yeah,
if you can...
But that's a risk.
It's a huge risk, right. And you have to have that money or have somebody who's willing to lose that money.
Exactly.
And that's the risk you're taking.
But even what you mentioned about like the extreme horror, that is like a small niche. But I think those readers are very loyal. Like they will just read, if someone puts out that extreme book, they'll read one right after the other. Just like the people who read the romance books. It's a small, much smaller niche. But those people probably make good money selling their extreme horror novels because they've really tapped that market.
Right. And I think... if you had a realistic goal of making $20,000 a year on your writing, mm-hmm. I think that's realistic. I think somebody can do that. again, it's a lot of work, right? Yeah. You could probably work at the gas station part-time and make that same money and not worry about writing. But it is something I think is realistic. Like, I'm not talking about retiring. I'm talking about just working hard every day on your craft and selling enough books that eventually, and I'm not saying you would do it this year, maybe 10 years from now, you're making that, right?
Yes. And it, like, for me, it's been a slow growth, but it has been a growth. So that's also something to keep in mind. That's encouraging.
Yeah. It's trending up and it's not going to disappear. The more you write, Regina, the more you get newer fans. And eventually somebody will be like, you know, maybe somebody picks it up and wants to make a Netflix movie out of Carney.
That would be amazing.
Right? And so they take the rights. You get the rights to that. You're now doing that. And everybody's like, oh, who's this Regina St. Clair? You remember Diablo Cody?
Diablo Cody, yes.
She was like the it girl for like when Juno came out. She did right. just write something. And let me look it up because
well,
I was...
She wrote that Megan Fox
yes,
horror movie that was a big bomb. Which I actually saw and kind of liked it.
I liked it too. But she...
what was that called? My Demon something?
No.
My Girlfriend is a Demon. I don't know.
Jennifer's Body.
Jennifer's Body. That's actually not the best title in the world.
Yeah, and it's weird because we had Diablo Cody write this thing, and she was really big at the time, and Megan Fox, who was really big at the time, and right. it still didn't work. I thought it was good, and I think it had a good...
I enjoyed it.
I think it had a good like message there in a way. But
I did too. It was kind of ahead of its time.
Yeah.
It had a more of a feminist message and the audience just wasn't there for that message. But I believe that if they put it out again, it might get a better audience.
Now she just wrote Lisa Frankenstein. This is this year. It just came out.
Okay.
And... it says it's an affectionate callback to classic horror comedies of the 80s.
Oh.
Lisa Frankenstein can be fun in its own right, despite not quite measuring up to the movie it imitates. So on Rotten Tomatoes, it got 50% by the critics, but 82% the audience liked it.
Oh, okay. That's
so
good.
I haven't watched it yet, but I want to watch it. I'm not sure if it's like a streaming movie. Writing for films is a lot different, but Diablo Cody has a following, and there's going to be people who want more of her stuff. And I think that's the same thing when it comes to writing. But again, I don't know what she did before Juno.
Yeah.
But I'm sure she worked a long time before getting there.
You know, but everyone has a flop in them, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I think Hollywood can be really tough because that movie... I'm sure a lot of people invested in that movie because it was Megan Fox and because it was Diablo Cody and they're both like a big deal. So when that movie flopped and people lost a lot of money, it probably took, I don't know about Megan Fox, I didn't really follow her career, but it probably took a lot to get back in the game after that, because then you're like box office poison and people want to avoid you. And that must be really tough.
Yeah. Because like, they say you're only as good as your most recent movie.
Your last movie. Yeah.
yeah. And so
and I think that, but as an independent writer, you don't have to, deal with that. You might have a flop, but you can always write another book.
Right.
Not that many people are investing in it, you know?
Right. Exactly. That's what's really nice about writing and especially self-publishing, whether it's a flop or not, you can do. And the other thing is, I remember this was a thing about YouTube people talk about, but I think it's the same thing with writing, that you're invisible in the beginning of your YouTube channel, and you could maybe make 100 videos that
yeah.
suck and nobody's going right. to see them because you're not getting any views. But if you look, eventually that first 100 videos are how you're learning to make these videos better. And then
yeah.
all of a sudden you have this following and people can't even imagine you making a bad video. Same thing with books. Like you're writing and you're writing and you're writing and it's probably a good thing people aren't buying them in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because you're learning your craft. And then you're...
Well, Derek Murphy talks about that too. He's like, I think one of the things he says is like, fail quicker.
Yeah.
Like, get them out. Get those crappy books out.
Just, yes.
You know.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's okay because somebody's going to find book 10 and be like, oh my God, this is like the best thing I've ever read. And then from that point on, you know, they're either going to read your old stuff or not even know about the old stuff, but it doesn't matter because you're now at a level that you're just, you got it down. And now
right,
you're...
And you're always learning.
Yeah.
Like if I go back and watch my early YouTube videos, it's painful. Like my sound sucks. I'm very awkward in front of the camera, all of that stuff. But you learn. And I think I've made over 400 videos now, which mm-hmm. is quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I do it because I enjoy it. And, you know, when I get a nice comment, and I've slowly grown that, you know, and then you also get a lot of analytics for YouTube, as you know. But I used to have about 100, even though I have like over 4,000 subscribers, which is great, I have an audience of about 100 to 200 who like watch every video I put out, if that makes sense. That has slowly grown to from 200 to 300 each week. It's grown just a little bit. And that's always good.
Yeah, it's a long game.
And I think it's a long game. And I think writing can be approached the same way. That's how I approach it, even though I didn't even start writing novels until I was well into my middle age period of my life. It's never too late to start.
I think that's the one thing that's really nice about this part. Like when you look at film, you know, we talked about this during our plastic surgery episode. Well, at the end of the episode, but like, you know, right. You have a time where it's like you're attractive. And then after that, it's like hard to get work. Music, you know, nobody wants to watch some old guy rocking out. I don't. And with writing, it's great. Like you can write at any age and keep going. Like, it's not like you're going to be I think people love old writers, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I do think there is that book talk young generation of writers who are young and cute, and maybe they would get a book contract sooner than an older person, but are they going to be able to have the longevity?
Well, also,
I mean, I'm just saying, I don't try to compete with the young kids because I can't.
I don't know. Maybe you can. The young kids like they can smell like the phony young if they're just, you know, a one hit wonder, but I don't think, like we talked about this before, you're not competing with anyone. The trick is if we have young writers and those writers have readers, that means more readers mean more chances for someone to find your book. That's sure. What's important, that we have more readers. Now, it doesn't matter about the writers. You're not competing with the writers. Yeah. You want more readers in the world.
And you shouldn't try to compete with the other writers.
Right. Just like they talk about the competition when you're on, you know, Instagram and seeing your friends and they have this great life and yours sucks. Like, that's fake. That's all fake. And so
very fake.
No reason to compete with other writers, because I'm sure they have imposter syndrome and all the other stuff that we all suffer from, they also suffer from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you really think about it, successful people aren't generally happier than unsuccessful people. I think happiness or unhappiness is kind of part of the human condition, and we all need to navigate it in our own way. It can feel good to make money at your craft, but then someone who's making a lot of money might feel this pressure to keep doing the same thing when they want to keep making money, if that makes sense. So you have to be careful not to let the money the market, I guess, since we're talking about that, the market shouldn't control you. You should learn about the market and find a way to get your books placed in a good position in the market. But don't, so writing to market maybe is the wrong term, because that kind of implies that you're writing, you're letting the market control your writing. Right. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I have a quote that I wrote down. I don't remember where I got it, but it says, control the process, you can't control the outcome.
Okay, that's good.
And that's kind of what you're saying, like, you know,
yeah,
why you can't control what happens. You can only control creating and doing your best work, but you can't control what the outcome is going to be.
True.
So yeah, right. You're right. You can become very successful. And that's scary. Like, that's probably more scary to become that successful right out of the gate. Because, yes, you're going to think, is it a fluke? Am I a phony? Can I do this again? As opposed to somebody who's worked at it and worked at it and worked at it. By the time you do get that to that place, you've known that you put the work in. And you don't feel, you probably might still have some issues, but you won't have it as much as if you just all of a sudden hit it big.
Yes. And I remember when I did Gemini Rising and it, you know, it was getting great attention, but I remember some guy who knew the business came up to me and said, one of the screenings, like, this is great. Just know that success is like winning the lottery. And I never forgot that. I was like, okay, what is he saying? Like it's a coin toss, or not even that. The odds are not so good. So that's part of the realistic expectation. I think if you set yourself up expecting your first book or whatever to come out of the gate and make you a lot of money, you might be discouraged from continuing your writing.
Yeah.
So you have to have realistic expectations. But, you know, this is all part of the process. The creative process is filled with disappointment, but also highs and lows and things you wouldn't even expect. Because sometimes just getting, like, one of my favorite responses to any of my books was when my first novel, Unmasked, came out, and one of the reviews just said, I learned something about life from reading this. I loved that, because that made, like you were saying, you put part of your soul into a story.
Mm-hmm.
Someone got that, what I put in there, even if it was a silly horror story. You know, there's still a message.
Well, that is,
and that's something that AI can't really do.
Yet. You hit exactly, I think, the point of this all, is that what is the reason for art? I think it's for one soul to connect with another. And I'm using the term soul loosely.
I believe in souls, so
right. That's
okay.
But to me, it's that one human connecting with another human on some level, and hopefully maybe learning or gaining some insight from that other human. And if you can do that for one person, that's amazing, you know? And if it's more people, that's also amazing. But like literally connecting, that's why I think I like writing so much when it comes to the arts, is because I can literally, like last night I was reading Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, who's like what, from 2000 years ago or whatever. But you're literally talking or having a conversation or sitting down and listening to these authors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a connection. Like, that's so weird when you think about it, that somebody from 2000 years ago, I'm hearing their voice.
And it makes sense.
And it's speaking to me.
Right.
And even if it's entertainment, for entertainment purposes, like Unmasked, there's something that we as humans can't avoid putting into that art.
Right.
And
if we're being honest.
Yeah.
And that's, you always have to approach it that way.
Yep. And that's the other book. If you want to write, it's called, I talked about this on, I think, my YouTube channel. It's called If You Want to Write. And she talks a lot about being honest and truthful. And that's why I like that book. It's not a book that's going to teach you how to write to the market and become rich, but it will help you learn how to do what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we went on for a very long time.
Yep. And I got to run.
I do too. So we'll be back next week with a new episode, and check out all our links in the show notes. And until then, have a wonderful week. Keep writing.
And let us know in the comments what you think about what we discussed here.
Yes, please.